Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Bella's murder is this force's highest profile investigation.
Her life cut short, and whoever did it's got away with it.
It will be our job to detect whether police corruption has contributed to this murder remaining unsolved.
Bella drew attention to links between organized crime and corrupt police officers.
There is no corruption in this police force.
A barefaced liar promoted to our highest office.
You should investigate.
Believe me, we will.
You have no idea what she's capable of.
A whole line of inquiries have been deliberately suppressed to protect organized crime.
Kate, I had nothing to do with it.
All I know is somebody's behind all this.
I'm being framed! No!
When did we stop caring about honesty and integrity?
Do you still believe there's a fourth man out there?
Man or woman?
Oh, hearty, hearty. Back. Sirens in the background. Whoop, whoop, whoop. It's the sound of some kind of police. And here with me is podcast MVP guest, Alan McPherson. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
Thank you. This is a long time going. We planned like 6-7 months for this damn episode, and it was so worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, I can't believe we even kept the date. After eventually, there's some recording mishap or, I don't know, just some schedule interference. Like, oh, shit, my boss called me in, you know, something, you know.
I fully expected to, like, sprain my ankle or have a collapsed lung or something today.
Oh, dear.
Just things were, like, too well in progress. But it was excellent getting back to revisit this series.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was just like, something's going to happen. Or, oh, shit, I forgot we did schedule that. You know, something. And we put this on the calendar for, like, finally, like, 3 months before. And we stuck to it. So,
in fairness, a child trafficking ring did try to frame me for a series of murders that I was not involved with, but fortunately, I was able to squeak my way out of that.
Don't play around with that, dude. It scared the shit out of me, especially when we're talking about a topical show, man.
Oh, that's it.
I always feel like somebody's watching me. So, yeah, it was Craig Craytown. But got to the end of the year and said, here's 2022. Let's review this bitch.
Let's do it. Yep.
So were you already into procedurals like Law and Order, Bosch, or even The Shield or Sons of Anarchy or whatever?
A little bit yes, a little bit no. Like, it's sort of a genre that I get into, but I'm not like obsessive about.
Not going to watch 50 seasons of it, but you're going to watch some of it and say, hey, that's some good acting and themes.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like, up until recently, I've been like a working chef. So it's like,
oh, really?
I don't. Yeah.
Recipe for disaster, he sensed.
A recipe for fallen arches and ruined knees. but so it's like, I've never really had a whole lot of time to invest with like long form
Right. TV programs. You need something before you hit the sack.
Exactly. Like, you preferably something kind of stupid. So a lot of like the good quality programs.
Well, there's a bunch of bumbling dummies here. There's some dipshits in this.
So yeah, so a lot of like the police procedurals and stuff that were like very popular, I kind of whiffed on a bit just because there were a bit.
Well, you said it best before. This is like the anti-copaganda show, and for good reason. You know, just for so long we would just see, oh, they blurred the line between the law being a vigilante and being a diligent officer. And, you know, some of it works and some of it, like, if I've enjoyed Chicago PD, but if it gets canceled, I'm at no loss. I'm kind of can't follow some of those characters after a while. It's like, okay, so the only way this ends is if Voight, for instance, dies. Like, The Shield ended, spoiler, for an excellent classic that everyone should have already seen. By him making a deal with the feds and basically working with them on a tight leash, you know, it was interesting. They couldn't pin stuff on him, and he had cleaned up the streets and he had made them show what an embarrassment the entire department was. To where they're like, just putting him in front of a jury isn't going to even work. It's just like there's so much office politics now. So, you know, this show, I just constantly couldn't not see a giant DVD case for it. You know, it was by Acorn Media, which distributes a lot of BBC UK programs in the US. Yep. It was airing on edited format on PBS. I'm sure they just, all they did is just play it after midnight and edit out the language. But there's not that much of it, but there's some.
It's pointed.
Right? Yeah, and there's definitely some very gruesomeness. So it's like, yeah, I don't even know how they would edit that. Probably not even show that season, but they definitely showed the first three seasons at least. And so, yeah, I pretty much had no problem. I would like binge this last year. I was able to binge like a season, like actually going on 2 years. So like I started in like, I want to say either 2019 or 2020. And then, you know, it was on Amazon for a while. And then I saw some other episodes on Hulu, 4 and 5 I saw on there. And then I got to, they still haven't unleashed the newest season, the 6th and final season, on any platform. So I had to use my resources, if you will. But
gotcha.
I plugged that in literally a month ago here, and I was like, yep, ready to go. Let's do it. And you were on your A game. You're like, yep, let's stick to it. Let's get it. Let's get this in. Mm. So how do you?
That's interesting. I came across this one. I think season 2 was in progress.
Oh, so you're way back. You're already, I need more. I need more already. Yeah.
No, it was one of those, like, I threw it on because it just seemed like kind of like a non-script.
They're each like 6 to 7 episodes. You know, British shows, the reason they're so easy to get into is they're brief. They're short.
and they don't seem to build around the idea that, oh, this could be a huge hit and we plan on carrying this on for 10 years.
Like, oh, totally. Like,
when a season ends, or a series as they call it ends, you're generally going to be happy if that was the end of it. It's not quite the entertainment Ponzi scheme that a lot of like North American shows are.
Totally. But I mean this was kind of appealing to everybody. This was appealing to people who liked Law and Order or Shield type stuff, as well as grittier stuff like Bosch or True Detective. And it is kind of like True Detective in that it's kind of an anthology with only like the main three characters returning each time. You know, what new A-list, D-list actor from Britain are they going to feature this year, you know, playing a bad cop? And you don't know until you know. So yeah, this is it. Brilliant casting. I guarantee you, you've never seen any of these actors in any roles like these, you know? So
absolutely.
In order, the bad cops. Actually, no, let's start with the good cops. So they are part of AC Unit 12, Anti-Corruption District 12, or Unit 12, whatever.
So it's sort of super internal affairs.
Absolutely. And there are some other bad apples who never get caught. Or if they do, they're probably scheming or on the heels of being caught. They'll be caught 20 years from now. And just this show is instantly just, I mean, they use pretty much what you're used to seeing in all these kinds of programs, a voyeuristic view, like, oh, I'm seeing something like a crime scene I have no business seeing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking over their shoulder behind the bullpen in their office, and they're, of course, just looking at them, just giving the intimidating factor, like, come and get me, fucker.
It gives you that little, like, tease of, oh, so that's how it gets done.
Absolutely.
And it is for entertainment purposes only, but it does carry itself with a weight that it gives you a feeling that they have some inside information.
And
it's
yeah.
not just, like, complete make-em-ups.
Oh, totally. And it's just so wild, like, how it happens. Just the detective sergeant, Steve, you know, played by Martin Compton,
mm-hmm.
you know, he, again, was in a questionable shooting, and they just figure he's good enough because even though the guy was innocent, he just receives a transfer here, and it's like, wow, okay, so you're not going to get demoted, but you are going to get from, you know, we don't accept you, and you've caused some heat, so you might as well just weed out all the bad cops.
So yeah, he demonstrated that he's willing to take a stand against his own peers.
Mm-hmm. So
it's like you passed the morality test. Like going
totally.
That phases. Yeah.
Yep. His partner is Detective Constable Kate, played by Vicky McClure, and she's, again, done undercover work and been doing it longer than him. She's his partner. His superintendent is Ted, played by Adrian Dunbar. And again, all three of these people, as I look at their resume, I'm like, fucking hell, I've seen a bunch of shit that they've done.
Uh-huh.
This might be their first lead role, but I guarantee you, you've seen them, whether or not you know them or not. And it's just like, Martin, he's been everything. Agatha Christie's, Marple, Silent Witness, Ripper Street, you know, a few different movies. Vicky, born in Nottingham, she's been in a bunch of stuff. All kinds of dramas and miniseries. Adrian, same thing. He used to have way longer hair. Now he's graying a bit. He was in The Crying Game, for God's sakes, in the Hall of Crowns. So there you go.
That's right? Yeah.
And all the rest of these guys, again, just brilliantly done. Just who is the baddie each season. So season one has Lenny James, you guys might know from Snatch, Walking Dead, and various other British shows. Jericho, there's a shout out. And
yeah. There's going to be, is it Snatch or Lockstock? There's going to be another one of those coming up in a few seasons, too. Call that there.
Yep. Season two had, God, who was it? I just had the notes.
It's Lindsay Denton is the character.
Oh, yes. And then, Keeley Hawes. Now,
yeah.
Sounds familiar. Oh. God, gorgeous. So you've seen her on Netflix's Bodyguard, and she was one of the original cast on Spooks, you know, MI5.
Mm-hmm.
Love her. Love her to death.
And unidentifiable in this role.
Yeah.
She has a totally different vibe about her.
Not relatable, not at all, and not, this is like, holy shit, am I even seeing the same actress? So everyone is unrecognizable in their parts. Season three, that was a bit of a blur. Who was the bad cop in that? That was.
It's tricky with that one because it's.
There's a
Denton
bunch of them,
comes
right?
back, and there's sort of like a red herring. There's a guy that you think is going to be sort of the main heel in the season, but he dies pretty quickly. And then it's more the caddy.
Yeah, the remainder of the crew. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up for. Season four, we got again Dandy Newton. That's right, Westworld and Chronicles of Riddick. Crash joins another cop who's basically killing other bad cops and covering it up. And then season five, we get to that's a great, great one as well. Stephen Graham, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
Yep. Stephen Graham, and if you know him, guys, he was also in Snatch. He's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Peaky Blinders, and Boardwalk Empire, if I'm not mistaken. So,
and current film out this year called Boiling Point, which is one of the better sort of restaurant thrillers that you're going to see.
Oh, really? Okay, sweet.
Yeah, recommend.
I will take you up on that. I will see that. Ooh. Please forward that to me. So again, just badasses, just people who have kind of never played the same role, I will argue, just for the most part. It's like, even if they've done cop roles. He's never seen him in anything remotely like this. And I mean, you just don't know where it's going, you know, just, and each episode is like 5 to 7 episodes. So it's just like you instant binge. Like I know I did the first season in the first episode of season 2 in one night. I was just like, yep. I need more, I need more.
It's easy to let that happen to you.
And I mean, there's just so many well done speeches. Electronic score helps complement the mood. So season 3, I think for me was kind of the weaker one. I just did not find any of those criminals interesting at all to get taken down. And it got a little self-indulgent for me. Just a little too much going on.
I can see that. Yeah, there isn't.
Still watchable.
It's the only one that doesn't have like a central. I don't even want to say bad guy necessarily, because you really kind of flip and flop as to.
Oh yeah, you know. But I know what you mean.
From 1 minute to be sympathetic to absolutely hating.
However it began, it just didn't begin interestingly enough to where I wanted to keep following it. But you still you go to the end because the detectives are still so well paced, and they know that they pretty much are putting, you know, brackets, bullet signs on their heads at every point. You know, they just they're in the crosshairs because. They have to go about it very reluctantly. You know, they can't just do what you see on a typical, you know, SVU episode where it's like, you get 20 years to life or unless you justify it. Right now. You know, they don't have that option at all. They don't have
not at all.
They don't have any lawyers. Once a lawyer comes in, pretty much it's kind of like The Closer. It's like interview them before the lawyer gets here. And
yeah,
but their about face is kind of like Bosch is like, everybody be on your best behavior. I will not cover for you while I expose some of the crooked attorneys in LA, you know, who are wrecking my career as well as other people's and defending serial killers. Here, they pretty much are like, it's not just the get here before the lawyer gets here, but also get something good, you know, get them on something good before you subpoena them, you know, to appear.
Absolutely. And, like one of the things I think about season 3 that makes it
season 1 and 2
not quite
are kind
as
of a
satisfying
blur.
Well, 3 I don't think is as satisfying as some of the other seasons, largely because it's more most of the drive in that particular season is sort of based around the over story, like the through line that goes through all the individual seasons is this massive
And I get it. You got to put something in the can, and it's hard to one-up yourself. Yeah. It's not like a terrible season of a show where you're like, it's run out of time, but it is one of those. It's like, if you missed it, that's okay. You know, just go on to the next one because they will reconnect the dots. They will always, I love it. They will show, you know, the various characters who were either killed or went on the run or currently serving prison and their connection to all the other bad cops is like good.
Or characters that you never thought you would ever see or need to think about again.
Because they contain the story so much. You think, oh, that's right. Oh, we are revisiting this. I thought they were just a piece of the puzzle, just another, you know, number in the system, so to speak, or another dead body.
No, totally. And it's a really neat trick the way they're able to play that. Like, I don't know if I've seen that kind of balance as done as well where you can pick up any season and watch it start to finish and be satisfied with it. They work self-contained, but
thank God
when you put them all together.
I
like an 18 episode run, I think would be death for something like that.
They would run out of steam. You know, they would do what they do on the gangster shows like Ray Donovan or Power or even, you know, a Sopranos type show where it's like, okay, and they're gonna be dead mid-season while we go on break, you know. Everyone had to have this Empire Strikes Back type, you know, cliffhanger. Is like, stay tuned next year, you know, for the conclusion. I'm like, no. So it's like, they didn't have that. It's like, you got 6 episodes. What do we do to keep you watching? And it all adds up together as opposed to easygoing frills and you think about the plot holes a year later.
Oh, that's such a deleterious thing that you can.
That's how your show dies too. So many people will admit is like, we ran out of ideas and, you know, we pretty much wrote ourselves into a corner here.
Total. And I mean, if you let the audience have too much time to think about it and nitpick it,
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, you can come up with the best material, but if you've given somebody, like, if you've given a large fan base the internet and the ability to spitball what could possibly be coming up next, like, you're going to out Fox
yourself. You are fucking doomed, you know, especially the guidebooks and no fair. I mean, my screenwriting professor always told us, no fair saying you don't know what happens next. You created the world, you know? Mm-hmm. You see it all the time. Even the best ones who you think are great are the ones who you think are hacks, and they'll do the whole, yeah, I didn't want to bother thinking about how so-and-so died. I just wanted to move it to the next thing. I'm like, well, damn it. People have to, you know, think about what happens next. And God.
Yeah, and you want people thinking like that too, right?
Well, and the filmmakers, they can backfire, especially when so-and-so dies. Well, how do I adapt that to film? You know?
Oh, sure.
Keep it open, especially if you do something as stupid as, you know, clearly seeing killed on screen.
you can work around that. That's easy.
You can work around it. But yeah, no, they don't have anything as outrageous as that, where, you know, guess who died on this season of Line of Duty. It's all pretty much straightforward, just... And it's not even a matter of who will snitch her at. It's like they give you equal time. You just see the predicament that the bad cop is in, why they think they're right. But even go a step further by doing the whole, you know, who are they covering for? Whose dick are they sucking off of, you know?
Oh, and there's some such a large portion
trigger
of the
warning,
time, too.
We have explicit language on this show. So.
Totally fucking explicit.
What the fuck? Why are you guys watching an R-rated show review if you can't handle R-rated language? What the fuck is wrong with you? Yeah. Now that we got that out. Sorry, go ahead.
Feels good.
It feels so good.
But that's one of the things that I really enjoy about this as a series, too, with Line of Duty. That
the language is very authentic sounding and not the typical, like, British, you know, where it's like, see, you know, everyone's calling each other bloody wanker or anything. It's like, no, they'll go... If you had any idea that, you know, who's gonna cut my throat, you know.
Yeah, it feels like a real world.
So real
that they're living in.
I definitely, I mean, if you pick up any of those DVDs, I know season one had the whole, I think it was Entertainment Weekly or something, said the perfect UK answer to The Wire and more addicting than The Shield. In the door where I was like, okay, interested now. I want to check this out. It was like, cause yeah, The Wire was just so good. Just every bit of profanity felt so legit. Like just, it wasn't just how it was acting and everything. You felt like someone could talk that way. Cause yeah. I mean, they're based on real people. Some of them.
And it's not showy, right? It's not.
No,
like,
they were not playing to the camera, which every show, good or bad, likes to do. And it's like, they weren't doing that.
I had a brilliant thought there and it just left.
Oh, shit. Well, imagine. So we were talking about the guys who play the actors. I mean, I've never seen... I know Thandi Newton got some award attention to this, so that was cool, you know, to just give that some extra attention. She's already getting extra attention at the second, third stage of her career with freaking Westworld, and she comes on this show. Like, it was a big deal. I saw it heavily promoted, season four marathons on PBS. It's like, okay, cool. Good for her getting award attention. Because... she's basically, it's very convoluted. It's like she's, and feel free to correct us. That'd be great, because then I'll let us know people are actually listening to this damn show. It's like she's covering up for some bad cops, and then it's like there's a serial killer on the loose as well, so it's even more gutsy. It's like definitely my second favorite season, probably.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's like a serial killer who isn't actually a serial killer.
Yeah, and then she does some serious killing, helps cover up a guy who was going to chainsaw her to death or something and covers that up. And you're like, whoa, okay.
Kind of, who was going to dismember her by accident.
Right.
It's the opening of that is very, it's almost, I view that as a little bit of like a bit of a piss take on Dexter.
I kind of got the sense of it too. It was making fun of just outrageous stuff. And I got a sense, it's like, okay, well, what do they do in Criminal Minds? Well, what can we do? That's like anti-Criminal Minds.
No, I mean, you're just the whole bit where like the killer has built an accidental killer in this case, who he thinks he's murdered her innocent, you know, in a self-defense kind of accident way.
That was cool too. His partner wakes up. He's about to frame her for the murder, him for the murder of the killer. And she wakes up and kills the killer. And yeah, the partner's like, what the fuck happened? What's all this gore? It's like, it's not Tarantino, but it does have a moment where he's like, man, you know, imagine waking up to that.
Well, it's funny you say Tarantino. Rewatching season 4 recently, is like, it reminded me.
Oh, did you?
Almost, man, of like.
That's too much. More... Pistol whipping.
But I almost had a bit of the Coen brothers of like
oh really
something. Well, that's sort of like the dumb criminals and everything goes wrong,
yeah, except
without the humor in it.
It's not a dark comedy, guys. It's not even a Ray Donovan moment where it's like, who will I kill this season to kill?
No, it's more like, what the fuck next?
Like, right. Well, how can you top that? And it never gets to a moment where you're just getting bored in between the carnage. It really is pretty good at pacing it, especially because like you say, season 3 was kind of just rolling the dice and it just felt like it was filler and it's like, okay, well, I need a little more.
Yeah.
It's
much, much more focused.
It's interesting. I thought I was going to be in the minority on that. So it's cool.
I really enjoyed 4. Just for you have this sort of the main antagonist who's going around, she's got gangrene the whole episode.
Oh, totally.
Actually, like, talk about your your Hitchcock bomb under the table.
And it's been a minute.
Literally rotting. Ugh.
Does she get murdered as well in her cell by someone, or does she live but gets incarcerated? Or
at the end of it, they just leave her that she's doing 10 years.
That's right. Okay, so that's just it, because everyone else around her definitely got killed by the perpetrators or, you know, killed before they could testify. And she was pretty much like the other ones, and we'll get to that, is do a good job of just pretend I'm not part of the problem. Pretend I'm part of the problem. I am part of the problem. Sorry. Dominoes are falling now.
There's no way to not be part of the problem. Mm-hmm. In this world, which is like another one of the
policing the police, baby. Yeah.
And then you've got the police that are policing the police.
We don't ever see as much of the tabloids, and I like that, you know, because usually, you know, anyone else would have done the whole, I mean, that works better for an America standard anyways, like, because it definitely applies to that. But yeah, it's like, basically, it's very much, in fact, it definitely reminds me of Spooks, the MI5 British show, where basically you get a lot of the tyrants that definitely you've heard some British tabloids even talk about on occasion, just basically just people who just feel like Britain should become a police state. And it's just cool to get that just then and there. And again, the subtexting is wonderful. You never feel like, you know, filmmakers are trying to act like it's Shakespeare and talk on naturally and fancy. And it's like, no, I legit could see someone talking like this. Just say they'll do something simple like fix the problem now, and you never get a sense of, like, you know, one of the main like union officers is behind it. You know, some other captain at another squad is also part of it. And you get a sense in those first 2 seasons without needing to see any more detail on it. But I'm also glad that it's not okay. Are they eventually going to be taken down? It's like, so that was realistic. They never get taken down. They're never touchable. But the other ones who are their main henchmen basically got taken down. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting what you were saying there about the tabloids and stuff too. It was only this most recent season where the press is involved at all.
Yeah.
She's killed. Like, it's the murder of a reporter that kind of sets things off in that. And that's as much as
I forgot
like,
about
the press you
get. Reporter. But yeah, it's just like, season 5, you know, that we revisit Stephen Graham's character. I think he had briefly been shown in some other ones, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's his main season where they're going to get him to snitch. And they're also, once again, back to more serial killers and unusual snitches. It was way better than 5, but it was also kind of, once again, just like, okay. So we're just, again, connecting the dots again. But yeah, they saved definitely the best for last with season 6, where again, yeah, this is like in a similar kind of one, much like Thandie Newton's character, where it's like this bad female cop played wonderfully by Kelly MacDonald, who you guys might know from No Country for Old Men and Boardwalk Empire and a bunch of other movies and shows. And yeah, here she pretty much, she much like Thandie, she is just, again, is just covering up. And I love how all the female cops who also were noticing her, who are patrol guys or captains in their districts, are just like, she's just not acting legit. I've never seen her on this game before. I don't trust her because I've known her to stretch the truth. So what is she hiding? I need you to investigate. And this was cool too, because she was a friend of, you know, Kate's character. So it was like, wow, okay. So she's putting her trust to the test, to where, you know, the anti-corruption unit are now having to police her. They're like, come on, you know, wheel it in.
Well, yeah. And I think it's like Kate is at a point where she is transferred out of the anti-corruption unit.
And they fake you out for a moment. There's a big shootout off screen. You're like, oh shit, did she die?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, what a nice version of the classic, like,
Rushamon
cliffhanger.
Who killed who? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, that's how you bring that back. They did that very, very well.
So well, without feeling like a cop out. And it's like, I didn't mean it. Pun that way, but yeah, this is like never a moment where you're just like, okay, just trying to make me wet my pants very cheaply. It's not cool.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you like season 6, because I was doing a little reading and I guess a lot of people were really disappointed by the ending.
Really?
Yeah.
How else could it end?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I really liked about it. Like, people were
giving time
complaints that it's an anti-climax. But I love the fact that it wasn't the reveal of some big, like, James Bond master villain.
Yeah, we've seen so much of that. There's no point.
And it just reads so much truer to me that, like,
James Bond, where I'm going to kill all of them in one circle, you know, at one time.
Or the guy that they've been after isn't some evil genius.
And they do a recap like of everybody. Pusher. Yeah. I mean, right? Don't get me wrong. Some people complained about The Shield despite its good reviews and award wins, and I thought that was the perfect way to end it. And some people complained about The Wire, and same deal. I'm like, how else would you end it? Like, it covered everything in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if they just want a bloodbath or something. I'm like, not everything has to be Scarface, and why would you? You know, just...
Well, I think people get, you know, kind of mixed up with the ending that they
envisioned. I'd rather it not be a red wedding, like Game of Thrones, yeah.
No, everything should end that way. That's how the original Three's Company should have ended. Mr. Furley loses it and just takes everybody out.
It's all in, baby. So yeah, I mean, like you say, the reporters are in this more often, and again, I like how, again, we think the female officer is dead at first, as well as our good cop. It was like, nope, they're both alive, but just barely, you know, they almost got killed by two evil female corrections, you know, prison officers who are in on the take. So that was cool.
They were really good kind of reoccurring heels too.
Oh yeah, they were. That's right. They do show up like in like brief segments, but you don't know anything about them or that they're going
to. Yeah.
But it just shows you anyone can be bought at any time.
Yep.
Money's right. And losing sense of purpose and everything. Yeah, I think I'm going to just take a little bribe. It's all good. Still a correction officer. Still.
Everyone is compromised. And it's whoever, you know, finds out that you're compromised and what they're totally willing to do with that information, right?
Well, yeah, just like Bosch was pretty good at showing how sooner or later even the good, the well-meaning attorneys are going to be targeted by serial killers, and Bosch has to basically show what a mockery his department is, and how they're basically sucking off the FBI. And so I think that was that this show does a similar good one. Now that you've done so much policing of the police and, you know, you're this close to kind of breaking, like almost getting killed or just having to just turn in your badge because it's just taken so much energy, just each takedown, that I just thought it was so cool how even our superintendent, he's losing his shit half this time. He's like, I literally can't call in anyone to do a favor anymore. This is it. You know, all the unions are closing in on us, not wanting to expose anything. It's just that systematically inept, you know?
No, he's been alienated from absolutely everybody at this point.
Even the cops who, you know, just like want to play politics, you know, hey, let's all go golfing together, even though we hate each other. You know, is he can't even get that anymore. Yeah.
No, his Freemason contacts aren't much good anymore. And...
Yeah, no more get out of jail free cards. If he goes to jail or gets framed for something, they will do everything they can to just keep him in there. And he's not going to let any of those punks, you know. I was even surprised at times that they never show anything of them at home, because there are moments where you're like, are they going to get sniped out outside of their residence? You know, because these bastards are so ruthless, you know.
And that's another thing that I kind of like about the program too, is that
Just get straight to policing.
Yeah, but there's all that they have character development, but it's also not soap opera-ish, right? Like,
yeah, never I can't do this anymore, gotta go home and have some flaming hot sex with the secretary. Yeah, none of that.
Yeah,
or no NYPD Blue, no, none of that. Great show in its own right, but none of that.
But all of the characters, you know, there are arcs for the characters in a way.
There are arcs.
But you're very, it's like you're looking at them through a window. They don't, it doesn't.
Yeah, Steve.
Like pile on the detail.
Once again, by season's series ends, he's once again in another broken hand or whatever. You know, I think he lose a finger at one point. He got tortured really badly. In
season one, he gets cutters to the hand.
Still getting over it. And
he's thrown down a flight of stairs. He's hooked on painkillers.
That's like the only crime he breaks. Is like, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to buy something from the drug dealers. And how shady that some of those drug dealers are in the same circles as the crooked cops who are getting them to run errands. So it's just like, yeah, it's always intense. They do it. Compared to all the other shows that do, you know, the handheld and Steadicam, they do even more just people looking at monitors and freaking the fuck out. It's just like, oh, no. Go back. He's not buying it. Well, less undercover stuff, less Point Break type stuff.
I gotta say, like, the program does do some really good action set pieces.
Oh, yeah. SWAT teams, I mean, and you get a sense of what the SWAT teams are like in Britain, you know. They're not like us where, you know, they come out of a van, you know, ready to bust down the door with the thing. It's like, they all got, like, giant machine guns, and then there's, like, two medics, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I like that idea. If you're calling in the special weapons team, the idea is, like, people are going to die.
They had some big-ass guns, like Call of Duty type guns.
But the interrogation scenes are just as tense, if not more so.
They are, because like, it shows you don't need blood every episode. You don't need, you know, someone literally being stripped of their humanity. You need to basically just say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get this or that. It's not, you know, because they've done that to death. It doesn't have to be an episode of 24 where Jack Bauer has to see who's doing an illegal interrogation of a suspect and who he has to basically just bribe to just get something done so he can get, you know. And it's not even anything else like that. Like, just the cops like, okay, you play the good cop, bad cop. It's like, they don't even do shit like that. Basically, they just do the whole, okay, we'll befriend them and we'll just be neutral in the assessment and see how they're lying. And just, they do kind of do what they do on Profiler and Criminal Minds. They look at their, well, doing it in their own special way, just looking at how their eyes are, you know.
Yeah, and just, you know, the stack of research that they always have in their like final interrogation interview sections is great. No, and I love that side, because that's almost where, I mean, I don't want to totally blow this series, but it does provide such a great mix of like espionage kind of action.
Yeah, spy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what a good spy movie does in general. It's just like,
totally.
And more or less, I mean, yeah. Basically, you also get a sense of what the bad cops think of them, instead of just, you know, you only see them on the 6 o'clock news being led outside a courtroom or get sniped. No, you don't even see any shit like that. You see more of just, here's what everyone thinks of me. I'm going to keep that cover.
Yeah.
They're buying it. Until I'm inevitably killed or have to kill. Like, Lenny James was interesting because, like, he basically has to kill himself. Otherwise, they will hunt down his family or threaten his family or endanger them if he keeps living and breathing. He just knows he knows too much. And so he's like, yeah, I'm better off dead, because then my family gets all the compensation money and they leave me. that they'll never bother them because, you know, I'm dead.
there's no one left to bother. he's an interest, like, that was one of the
and he's always regretting it, like, they kill his dog and he's like, oh no, it's all good, babe, it's all good. It's not all good.
I mean, he really, that's the thing with him, like, he didn't really think he was doing anything terrible until it was too late for him to get out of it.
Well, that's a better angle, though, because so often you see, again, like, Vic is only doing what he was taught by his crooked captain, and then eventually decided, well, again, I'm a crook who wants money, and I make no apologies about it. I'm like Tony Soprano, so yeah, I'm gonna extort anyone while taking down serial killers and all that. But yeah, it's like he's pretty much is like, he was lying, he was covering up a few things, maybe lying about how someone was killed, and maybe still in drugs here and there. But yeah, it's like he was still every once in a while turning a blind eye to some awful crime he knew about. I was like, okay, well.
Yeah, until it got a little too close, and he was kind of in a delusional state where he was kind of in control.
those were some serious punks and serial killers.
Well, that one neighborhood that the program always comes back to, what is it, Moss Heath? They just make that look like it's like a Lovecraftian hellhole of crime.
Yeah,
like all evil in the world eventually comes back.
A den. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's from the same cesspool as all the other fuckers, 9 to 5.
Well, it's nice that it almost has a bit of a mythology. Like,
when you got to characterize the setting, you know?
You hear a certain name come up because it's been brought up a couple times in an earlier season. It's like, oh, okay, you know that this is going to mean something.
Which one was that? There's so many.
Well, just places like the public housing place, neighborhood Moss Heath, where you know that.
I do remember Moss. Yeah.
Where that was sort of where the gang started off in the first season, and everything always seems to wind back there. That's where, like, all the literally the dead bodies and freezers
are. Oh, totally. Held. You don't even give shit's worth about, any of the gangsters at this point, other than the ones that are bribing, you know, the crooked cops, making them do all these awful things for them. You know, it's your family if you don't get me off, you know, and I'll expose that, you know, if I snitch, I'm dead. I don't want that. So that's an interesting dilemma as opposed to the typical, you know, if I snitch, I'm dead and I'll come for your family. It's like, no, they pretty much do the whole come for your family, expose you. And I got plenty of people on my roster defending me in prison. So you can try and send a goon or a crooked prison guard to come to me.
Absolutely.
You know, it'll be a while before they get to shank me. Like, chances are the more, it is a measuring contest. I have more men on my payroll and you're fucking dead.
And none of the alliances are, like, clear. And I don't mean to say that it's like it's in a confused
story. No, I know what you mean. That's so
yeah,
true.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not, there's not like a straight line. There's not like a straight hierarchy.
It's not easy either. No, none of it. Not even remotely. Yeah.
Which I think is a very, you know, it's a welcome way of depicting conspiracies in this day and age, where, like, people are really, like, kind of looking for the big bad who is responsible for everything. Mm-hmm. But this presents a world where it's really diffused. Like, there isn't going to be a top guy to take out.
No.
There's like 20 middle managers of crime and no CEO.
Right?
Yeah. And that's really the scary thought, too.
It really is. It's like, because it's already bad enough, like, even when it's something simple as addressing a speed ticket, updating your license, imagine how hard it would be if you have an elongated, you know. It's just like, yeah, it's not easy. And another underrated show, have you seen City on a Hill?
No, I haven't. You recommended that to me, and I haven't got around to it.
Okay, so that's cool because basically, what's it called? Alice Hodge plays an attorney. He's already having to kind of get past through some of the segregation in 90s Boston. The 80s have just ended. It's a timely, you know, fictional set piece. And it's really cool how he basically gets to, you know, work alongside a crooked FBI agent who also becomes kind of a vigilante.
Okay.
And, you know, played by Kevin Bacon. And making it even cooler, it also, since it's set in Boston, it's also part of the St. Elsewhere universe. They go to that
Hospital.
That, yes, that, or Chicago, wherever. No, it was Boston. Okay, well.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, they go there, so it's part of the whole Homicide, Law & Order universe in some loose way. So that's cool.
Produced that is by really Tom cool.
But, yeah, it's cool in that it also just, you know, I think it's, I don't even know who watches it. It seems like many watch it to get award noms, but I don't even hear enough people talk about it. It's just like Homeland also on Showtime. So what that one does so well is also just showing how everyone is also kind of in an identity crisis. Basically, Kevin Bacon's a shitty husband and he's learning how to try and be a better dad, as well as kind of find the only friend he has left who previously used him, you know, subpoenaed him to get some info, and he led him on a goose chase to get that info. And now he feels like he owes him when he finds out his wife has been targeted by some gangsters he knew. So it's much like how those guys crafted Oz and some of those in The Wire, you know, it's just, everyone has a turning point. And I think this show does a lot of that same kind of spell, like all the good US and UK shows do, is like, you absolutely just, you know, I never felt like anyone didn't have a complete journey. Like the boss, the superintendent on line duty, I pretty much got a sense, okay, this unit could close up or he's stepping down, but he's done all he can. You know, it's taken the best out of him. He's done what he could to at least get rid of most of the cops for this decade that were abusing the power and privilege. And did you get a sense that any of them would promote? It seemed like, the other two were stepping down as well.
They look like they're getting really close to being burned out. And
I liked how it kept it ambiguous, so they might do a reunion movie 10, 20 years from now.
I mean, there's certainly, you know, there's talk of them coming back for a season 7, which I'd be more than happy
with. Even though the advertisements on the thing I was watching said, witness the finals. Susan, you know, like, yeah, it could easily pull a Deadwood or Sopranos, come back with a reunion movie 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, it was a satisfying ending enough for all the plot threads that they had in play, but it also kind of could act as like a little bit of like resetting the deck.
Oh, totally.
Right, so I'd be happy with that one way or the other, but yeah, like I don't see
why anyone would hate this season. I mean, what else do you want? I mean, The Expanse went out with a bang. The Yellowstone is still going. The Power shows, I'm really satisfied by those take on all the crooked attorneys and gangs and cops in New York and how everyone pretty much justifies being a hypocrite. That's why people like watching that. It's just so good at its social commentary, much like George Romero's good at sneaking in stuff for his zombie movies, you know, back in the day. So I can totally see, you know, Line of Duty continually being rediscovered, and I don't know why they don't put it on Netflix. It would kill. It would absolutely fucking kill. It would.
Well, they had it on Netflix for quite
That's what
some
I
time.
Thought at some point. Yeah. And they keep taking some of them off, and they haven't released the latest season. I don't know if they're...
No, the North American rights for that, for streaming, are now all on BritBox. So, at least in Canada. But for whatever reason, season 5 of Line of Duty seems to be sitting there alone on Netflix.
The hell, people! Was the ratings disappointing? This is how you don't get anyone to see it if you don't.
Yeah, I don't know. International streaming.
Was there a dispute
copyright
with the BBC
law?
Or something?
Actually, well, I believe that there was a big pissing match between Netflix and the BBC.
That would make sense because they often let their stuff be distributed through Warner Brothers. So maybe HBO Max was like, hey, give it to us.
Well, there was a time where when on the BB, whatever the BBC's in-house streaming service is, they decided to start airing Doctor Who on that. And that was when it was at the height of its popularity. And I guess that pissed Netflix off.
And I would not be surprised if both of them were just, you know, doing a measuring contest. It's like, you get to stream it. No, I get to stream it.
Yeah. Totally.
I had the rights.
It's nice to know that egos don't get involved in international business.
And we give all these fuckers giant amounts of money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we reward them for it. So, you know, what else are they going to do?
Right. What else would you do?
Obviously not broke. Did you ever see, what was it? Yeah, you mentioned earlier, The Bodyguard.
Yeah, because same kind of deal, you know, with the whole detailing the various London streets and police procedures. And, you know, that was cool, too, because that one dealt with, again, bodyguard for hire on, you know, figuring out a conspiracy and pretty much, you know, everything you want a conspiracy thing. You know, they get taught, they get fired, they have to work against the clock, try to expose the deception without breaking the law. And, you know, this one, you did feel like, you know, much like just any good legal thriller is like, okay, yeah, they got ambushed or someone said something while no one else was recording or documenting what the killer said or, and I think it is like a better season of Criminal Minds where it's like, okay, eventually someone's going to get to the tipping point and just say, you know, you're stepping down, you know, you're endangering people or you're just not
yourself.
Good. You're full of yourself. Your office politics especially don't float our boat. You know, you're getting demoted. But they even go even a step further, just like any good Sidney Lumet, you know, Serpico or Prince of the City type movie where it's like basically you just again you sense the exhaustion on everybody's and you don't even need to see him break a sweat for you to know that you just get the actors are just so good at the subtleties and it's not just the script is working and the filmmakers are competent, it really is well formatted to where I'm with you. I think it stands so well on its own, just like again I mean we're just again, we're comparing all these other shows just to tell you guys how it stands out differently from the other ones. Because there's only been so many hundreds of this. Like Yellowstone was cool because instead of just being, hey, you know, I'm an asshole from New Jersey or from the hood, I'm a cowboy who never did care for the government interference and everyone trying to buy my land is a ruthless, you know, murderous businessman. You know, pretty cool concept. And much like Ray Donovan in Power, it's pretty much has a lot of guys who eventually kind of have to shrug their shoulders once they contradict themselves after a while, which which changes that up for the whole villain or anti-hero as the protagonist. And yeah, here, yeah, we just get the sense that, again, they're an anti-corruption unit, but they're hardly super cops. You know, they're not reckless and they're also not, they have to, it's a giant, elongated, but very fascinating chess games. It's like, any move they have, you know, could be dire. And you just love how, again, the superintendent, you know, always has his trust in them, but doesn't always tell them until, you know, he pats them on the back when they finally get the case. And the others, you know, have to decide who's the snitch and who's just baiting them, just trying to get their sympathy card, but is really just a piece of shit, you know, behind the badge.
And that's what a large part of it comes down to, is that, like, the whole idea behind the anti-corruption unit is they're holding, rightfully so, the police to very high standards. But they're also to the point where it's almost becomes impossibly high standards that they themselves don't even live up to a lot of the time.
Right.
That, you know, they have, all of them have fucked up their own investigations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what you
none of them wanted this job, but they got handed it, and they're so good at their job that they get even better at this. And it's just like, and it's not personal. You never feel like you're just doing it just to be a prick. Like so many cop shows would always have the, oh, great, the IAD's here. You know, it's like, yeah, well, this is before we found out that cops do, you know, break the rules. Like, you watch Hill Street Blues nowadays, it's practically a documentary.
Yeah, you're right, eh?
Someone was talking, reading some fucked up stories. And I mean, Stephen Bochco and all those other guys, Stephen J. Cannell, did so good at just all their making that interesting. And obviously Dick Wolf, you know, had based his career on it. But that's why we're still watching this stuff. I've been watching since I was 15. So, I mean, it's just very interesting. I
would just it also set the mold for a lot of stuff that came after.
Right? Yeah, it's just like with any sci-fi show. Is like, is it going to be like The Expanse, or is it going to be like Star Trek? What's it going to be like? Is it, or is it going to be more of the stuff that we grew up loving? You know, it's like whatever you choose. You know, just keep doing the formula so well. I mean, the loyal fans do return eventually. So, I mean, there's plenty of other shows that were just so good and they ended on a wrong way because basically either the writers or actors got bored and they just didn't have any good way to just write them out, or they just became, again, just like you were saying, TV fodder after a while. It's like, okay, it's still on, but I'm not really, I don't know who's watching it other than the creators. It's not interesting. Yeah. So yeah, this one, I mean, I think it took a bit of a gap in between one of those seasons. So, I mean, it was hard to pay attention to, but hopefully people who still buy physical media will buy one of those discounted sets, or again, give some of these a stream on Hulu, Prime, and Netflix. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's well worth your time. And I would say, like, if you like crime shows of just about any sort, you're going to find something that you...
Absolutely.
Like, if you like the psychological, like getting into the heads of the cops and the criminals, it's there for you. If you like action set pieces, it's got plenty of those. If you like snappy dialogue, it's got a lot of that.
Oh, totally. Even did you ever see Homicide or Prime Suspect?
Oh, yeah.
I definitely, I mean, Prime Suspect did a lot of the same kind of thing, you know, where the character and the armored policeman will go through unusual ghettos or just suburb areas where, you know, people are getting high and just doing very petty stuff. They don't know why they kill. And I mean, Gillian Anderson had that other show, The Fall. And it's like, so I think those all, those two and those three other ones and this one are pretty much perfect examples of how they kind of just keeps us slightly changing the genre a bit. And that's just enough. That's just enough to stand out and be, you know, separated from The Shield or The Wire.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's sometimes it is just those fine details that make all the difference.
Because The Wire, it just showed you how your heroes are douchebags. You know, they great cops, not people, you know, persons, or, you know, that if they didn't have good this roommate job, they would probably drink themselves or blow their brains out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
McNulty, great detective, shitty human being, doesn't even know his kid's birthday. It's like, I wasn't even reading into much of that, you know, growing up. And I already knew he was a piece of work. It's like, yeah, there's a reason he sucks. He's just not with it. He's a good detective. I feel sorry for him, but I also find him very petty. And yeah, Homicide had the same thing where one of them decides to kind of cover up their killing of a serial killer who's going to walk, and Criminal Minds is the same thing. And it's like, but Prime Suspect, I think what it did well, as much what you hinted at, is just the streets of London are as much a character where you always get the sense that, you know, if you, you know, the simplest thing that you could have solved, you don't know until it's too late. The person's dead the next day who you talked with, you know, 14 hours ago. And it wasn't overplayed with, oh no, you know, it was all more, it's just slow, you know, slow and steady, you know, wins the race on these guys. Just take a minute. He's got to slowly report everyone who's doing everything the wrong way and why they're the serial killer and why Prime Suspect was just great in that you've never seen a strong, you know, commanding detective, you know, who had to not only fight what limited resources and defunding she had, but also sexism. And so this was cool in that, yeah, it's like they got the funds and zero cooperation, and now they got to still think outside the box. How can I address my case? I can't trust anyone to be an informant because they'll always leave something out of the report because they're friends with one of the pricks that they're arresting or some other shit.
trying to make themselves look a little bit better or less exposed.
And word travels fast. The minute I arrive, someone always says lawyer or go fuck yourself. And so it's now a matter of how to, you know, I pretty much can only go up to them if I pretty much have a subpoena to give them. It's like, yep, come see me in the conference room later tonight after the, you know, police gathering or government's meeting.
Any closing thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got a closing question for you. So one of the things that people know, like that Line of Duty's got a reputation for, are the big shock moments.
Dun dun. Yeah.
What's your favorite? Give me like your top two.
Probably, obviously, the chainsaw moment, just because how often do you see a chainsaw used in a serious way, you know? And just the way it was just so well acted by Thandie Newton. She wakes up, she's like, oh, fuck. And you think she's dead. And then by next episode, you see all the carcass about it. It's not hers. And I was like,
it's not, no.
I was marathoning it all that day. And I was like, that's a great, just leading me into it, you know? So there was that, and then there was, again, the shocking plot twist of how season one ends. But, yeah, go ahead with your favorites.
I almost hate to say it, but season two, and okay. I guess that you could put this in the...
Because Keeley Hawes is playing it so innocently, and then you're just like, eh, but we still always have the hunch they might be leaving something out, it might be harmless, or it might actually be just them covering their ass in...
Well, I'm thinking of the fate of Steve Arnott's short-lived romance with the other cop.
Is that in season two or three?
I think isn't that two?
That might be. Okay, he is a hopeless romantic, and I do like how he pretty much, at that point on, his soul dies. He's just like, he can't have it. So just go get a Hershey bar, you know, get a wank. Get a smoke. He's always smoking, but that's as much fun as you're gonna have. Yeah.
it's filmed so like sudden, but also matter of factly, like horrific act of violence.
These guys clearly had a good acting workshop. They are just doing the backstory with the characters. Like, what does my character do? It's like, just pretty much lose my mind, get no sleep, get no friends, lose friends because they happen to be bad cops, and. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this. You don't have much to start with, but you're going to have less.
Yeah. Eat shit and die. And after throwing away all the other scumbags. and obviously, I mean, season six had two holy shit moments. You had, again, Kelly kills a cop who's going to snitch on her, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Or was that the reporter? I can't remember who she drowns and then swims out of the way.
No, that's one of the bent cops.
So there you go. Yeah, she kills the other snitch cop who's in on the details with her. And then, again, you think she and our, you know, anti-corruption protagonist get killed, and of course they don't. Those were two great holy shit moments that made the whole season just, you know, tick-tock, just go by in a jiffy. And along with just, again, our superintendent's just great closing speeches, just... It's like, man, it might not be Shakespeare, but it's pretty fucking close.
But it's pretty good.
It's pretty damn good. And I will happily fund your next project, guys. I'm sorry. That's some great stuff. Yep, what do you think they will do? I couldn't find anything on the TV writers, but it seems like they've worked on a lot of ongoing stuff for years on end. Let me look up.
Yeah, the one, what's his name? Jed Mercurio is the one that gets most of the credit.
Yeah, Jed Mercurio, yeah. I almost said it as Makishia. Yeah. Okay. So he created Bodyguard. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So they both seem to have the same sort of moral center.
Absolutely. Right. And he did Bodies, which I heard was a cool just hospital drama that ran for two seasons.
Oh, I haven't seen 0.5, that.
And The Grimleys, which is a sitcom. So yeah. Oh, a few episodes of Strike Back and. Critical, okay. Another medical drama, once again, with Lenny James, which I hear is very above average. It's like pretty much just showing just the morbid side of doing operations. But yeah, he did a few episodes of Strike Back, which I definitely think gave him some inspiration for the whole, you know, police scenes that you see.
Definitely.
Because they pretty much are. They're basically, SWAT team is a militia, you know?
Yeah. Shh, don't say that out loud.
And I can see why Britain is pretty much becoming a police state, but it's so wild how they're able to break through stuff that, you know, the alt-right, if people like us do this, we're just called snowflakes. How dare you show them a bad light, you know?
Oh, I know. That is very true.
I guess they just say, bloody hell, it's good show. Good show, man.
They're all packed onto an island together. They probably can't.
They got to put up with each other. It's like, yeah.
You know, they got to deal with it a bit more directly.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
But that's all I've got, and I would.
This was a delight.
Yeah, it's really good. Nice to chat with you. Like,
yeah,
like
guys,
in person is reasonable.
Don't give up streaming just yet. Check these out, please. Buy season 6 or watch it wherever you watch TV online for free. I don't give a fuck. Just watch it, support it. Buy a season for someone who still does physical stuff but who likes procedurals for their birthday or anything on the PBS catalog. It's got to be on there.
Yeah, it goes down smooth and it's not boring. Like, and that's
even when it's not as interesting as season 3, it's one hell of a show, and it just sizzles with just not just brooding suspense, but just showing how it's just so hard to do the right thing in any context. It's just like, yeah, how do I report bullies?
And as much as, you know, like we're talking about, it's like kind of high-minded and intelligent.
Really mature, really well handled, yeah. Without feeling like everyone is just, like you say, a soap opera character or just excellent theater actors writing over-scripted, you know.
But on top of that, too, like crazy bonkers stuff does happen on the regular as well.
Oh, totally.
You just want to see some maniac nonsense. Like, it's got you covered on that basis as well. So.
Yeah, if you just want to see an no holds barred, just gory tell, that will definitely appeal to those who definitely don't like being preached to. It'll definitely be appealing to even a Breaking Bad type crowd for sure.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's actually a good comparison too.
So yeah, if you don't want, if you don't like typical procedurals, I mean, that's why I compared it to Prime Suspect and Homicide. Those shows were good at getting people into them, even those who didn't care for, you know, Murder at 8, you know,
yeah,
followed by Mystery at 9, you know. So, yeah. So yeah, absolutely. International hit summed up. So thank you ever so much for joining on here. Anything you want to plug, please?
No, I've got nothing much going on right now, so I just want to plug everyone, enjoy your lives,
right?
and you know, don't put yourself in any moral compromising positions.
Just don't become a cop. I'm a security guard. I knew, hey, the difference between being a cop, you're just a civilian who reports bad things that are wrong and drive around a company car pretty easy. Well paid, got a pay raise. I've been consistent.
Hey, there you go. Well, hopefully the pay raise will cover all the sterilizing spray that you have to use in your cars.
I do, in fact, indeed.
Excellent, excellent.
I don't do what on some of these shows where it just seems like they're following COVID half the time. I'm like, what version of real world is this now set? Are they just stopping the procedures because it's getting too depressing filming on screen?
All right.
You aced it. Thank you much.
We'll return after these messages.
JURRS Podcast is proud to promote AutoCorrect, an independent film company with experienced industry professionals who can serve all your film industry needs. They include self-tapes, voice actor recordings, demo reel editing, script revisions, headshots, and much more. They're ActorCorrect at your request. Book them on Instagram.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, Prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely
at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie.
How
did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Kuber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider, and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a cup of brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-last plot hole, a gratuitous movie. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show.